Well, for the benefit of whoever may ever play this tape, I forgot to turn it on here. We're about halfway through our introduction here. But at any rate, we move on. Just happened to overlook it a while ago. Right, so, but religiously, they were worshiping the idols of Baal. These prophets and these reformers were able to turn enough of them back to God that the country of the South was spared. Now, the teaching of this book, first of all, is the holiness of Jehovah. God's absolute holiness, and he cannot tolerate sin. This is one of the emphatic thoughts of his emphasis there. Also, he has one of the strongest and clearest messianic prophecies in all the Old Testament. Chapters 4 and 5 of the book of Micah both deal with the coming of the Messiah. And you notice a parallel or likeness between Micah and Isaiah, only Micah is much more complete than Isaiah in that. Both of them have the same words to start with, that it shall come to pass in the latter days, the mountain of Jehovah's house shall be established on the top of the mountains. Right? Both of them have that. Now, which one was the originator of it? Whether they're both quoting from an older prophet, or whether both of them were inspired by the same to say the same thing, I don't know. I wouldn't make even a guess on that. But the society was especially corrupt. Now, the wealthy landowners were pushing out the small people who owned their little inheritances. They were buying them up and pushing them out into the city. Moving into the city is always a bad thing. And so here in the city, you have the corruption of a city that you have today. I think one of the things that's happening to our country is the fact that we're moving to the city and no longer living out in the country. We don't know what country life is. We don't know what it is to live close to nature. The modern group doesn't. And so you have a situation that's unhealthy and unwholesome. Well, they had the same thing. Well, all right, that gives us just enough introduction to it. We'll go on with the lesson now. I want to cover a chapter 2, if I may, this morning. Now, the word of Jehovah that came to Micah, the Moorish type, in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Now, you remember that Hosea prophesied to the north, to Samaria, but he included Jerusalem and Judah in his prophesy, more or less as an aside. Now you have the opposite here in Micah. Micah is primarily to people, for one of them emphasized his prophesying to Samaria and an aside to Israel, to Judah. The other one emphasized Judah and the place where he took up his presence among the people in what we call the Shekinah, the Spirit. But his temple was in heaven. Now notice, he's speaking to them from heaven, his heavenly temple there. The Lord is witness against you from his holy temple. For behold, Jehovah cometh forth out of his place, and out from heaven, and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. Now the high places of the earth are those places of worship. The places of idolatrous worship, the high places, where they would burn incense or burn whatever it might be unto their heathen god. Now God said, I'm going to come down out of my temple, out of my place. I'm going to tread upon these high places. That he's going to crush them, going to destroy them of the earth. And the mountains shall be melted under him, and the valleys shall be cleft as wax before the fire, as water that is poured down a steep place. Now you notice he's using a figure there of a volcano and the lava flowing down it. Now that, not literal, there'd be no literal volcano there, but as the fire of a volcano erupting flows down the mountainside and destroys everything before it. So Jehovah is going to, his wrath will overflow as a volcano and the fire will devour the wickedness of the people at that time. A very strong figure. And we can see that. Well, I'm going to pour it down a steep place here. and water that are poured down a steep place. So when that volcano is starting, nothing can stop it. Well, in Hawaii, they try to stop it by building some kind of breastwork or digging trenches so it goes some other place, but it's pretty hard to control. But once it gets there, well, you've got to get back. For the transgression of Jacob. Now remember that Jacob, that includes both Israel and Judah, both nations there. Behold, he said, for the transgression of Jacob is all this, and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? So here the high places are the cause of his wrath. The sins of Jacob are in Samaria and in Jerusalem, in Judah. So this is the thing that brought about the wrath of God, the wickedness of the people. Now, that always invokes the wrath of God. I made the statement many times, God never destroys a nation that's doing right, that fears him, respects him, never destroyed one. It's always when the cup of their iniquity is full, when there's no more salt to save it, when the leaven is not there to influence it. That's when God destroys a people. Now, our nation will last as long as there's enough salt to preserve it, there's enough light to shine there, but when that's gone, then the nation will be gone. Pride will destroy it, no longer fit to live. And this is the thing I'm trying to impress in these studies and keep before you all the time. All right? And therefore, since it's Samaria and Jerusalem, therefore I will make Samaria as a heap of the field and as places for planting vineyards. In other words, I'll clean it all. I'll just clear it off there as a place to plant a vineyard. That means the total destruction of it. All right? And place it for planting of vineyards. And I will pour down the stones thereof into the valley, and I will uncover the foundation thereof. So what God is going to do then to Samaria, the buildings will all be destroyed. The foundations will be laid open there. And it'll be as clean as a place to plant a vineyard. Just the idea of it. Expression there, then of a terrible judgment is going to come their way. And this did come. This came about 727 to 722. The siege against Samaria began in 727 by Tiglath-Pileser. It was completed, it's thought, by Sargon. I don't think Tiglath-Pileser completed it. Thought Sargon completed it in 722 and carried them away into captivity. But at any rate, it was on its way then. So if this was 735, just 10 or 12 years from then, why, its destruction came. Well, this is 1992. Well, by 2000, we keep talking about what we're going to do by 2000, we may not be here by 2000. God could destroy this nation within that 8 or 10 years, as he did Samaria. So, boast not thyself of the mortal, for no man knoweth what a day will bring forth. That's Proverbs 27:1. Don't boast what you're going to do tomorrow. Old Ahab, one of the only things Ahab ever said, I thought made good sense. Before you're not telling people what you're going to do beforehand, but telling people what you've done afterwards. So both of those, the proverb of Solomon and this proverb of Ahab, both of them make good sense. Boast not thyself of the morrow, for no man knoweth what a day will bring forth. And let not him that put it on the armor boast himself as he that taketh it off. Both, that's good advice. And all her graven images shall be beaten to pieces, and all her hires shall be burned with fire, and all her idols will I lay desolate, for the hire of a harlot hath she gathered them, and under the hire of a harlot shall they return. Well, what does that mean? That means that Samaria have built these idols to placate the pagan gods, thinking that the increase and the wealth came from these gods. Right? So actually, what they had was the hire of a harlot. religious prostitution, religious whoredom. That's what you remember. Hosea used that term nine times, whoredom, and played the harlot nine times. So Samaria and Israel had played the harlot, committed great whoredom against Jehovah. Right? For the what? For the hire served these idols for what they thought the idols were giving them in return. Now he said, and it will be returned to the hire of the harlot. That is, it will be carried into Assyria, where that it will be dedicated unto the heathen gods of that country. So that which you got from serving the gods will go to the gods of Assyria when they overcome and take away and plunder all of your wealth and riches. Interesting statement, isn't it? For all her graven images shall be beaten to pieces, all her hire shall be burned with fire, and all her idols will I lay desolate, for of the hire of a harlot has she gathered them, and unto the hire of a harlot shall they return. From one pagan concept to another. All right. Now that's the Samaria. Now he turns from there. For this will I lament and wail. I will go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like the jackals and a lamentation like the ostriches. Now when Micah says he'll go stripped naked, same thing Isaiah said. Both of them said that. When he said that, that didn't mean nude as we think of it. It means he'd be stripped down to the attire of a captive. That is, all he'd have would be the shorts on, something of that nature, just the underwear left there of that time. So that's what it means. He's stripped of his clothes there and stripped him and went about as a slave, or rather as a captive, crying out as a jackal, or shrieking as an ostrich, to try to impress the people of what was going to take place here. kind of reminds us of Ezekiel and some of the things he did, doesn't it? Trying to attract attention, get the people to understand what's going to take place. This is what they were trying to do. Well, all right, that's what he will do. Now notice he turns to Jerusalem now. For her wounds are incurable, for it has come even unto Judah. It reacheth under the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem. So Jerusalem, all right. So now then, it's going to come to Jerusalem with the gate to God's people there. It'd been the capital there. So he says here, I mentioned about 8 or 10, I don't remember how many, I didn't count them, villages here in this neighborhood. And every one of these names is parallel to what he's talking about, what they call palinomasia. That is a word that has a play on it there. Well, that's what this does. Now tell it not in Gath, that is Tell Town. Weep not at all at Bethlehem, that's Dust Town. Have I rolled myself in the dust? For each of these villages that he mentions here has a name out of which he's going to get a thing that happens to the people there and what he's doing. Pass away, O inhabitant of Shaphar, that's Fair Town, in nakedness and shame. That, you see, she was fair, and the word instead of inhabitant is really inhabitress. Inhabitress there, the female, feminine. So as a female is fair and beautiful, so she'll be carried away in nakedness and shame there, bereft of her beauty and a fairness. So here's Fair Town, but bereft of your fairness. The inhabitant of Zaanan, that is March Town, is not come forth. That is March Town, fails to march. They've not come forth in freedom. So again, you have a play on your word there. Now the wailing of Beth Ezel, that is neighbor town, a neighbor house here, house of your neighbor, shall take from you the stay thereof. For the inhabitant of Meroth, and I forget what that would mean, but at any rate, waiteth anxiously for good, because evil is come down from Jehovah under the gate of Jerusalem. That is, and so all of these towns, these villages, And I think that these are where he did his preaching. I think he was preaching in these towns, telling them what's going to happen unto them and what's going to come to them. Bind the chariot to the swift steed, O inhabitant of Lachish. Now Lachish was horse town. It meant it was horse town. That was a place where the Egyptians would bring their horses here, and Solomon would buy them, or they would be bought there and traded for this particular place. It's called horse town. And notice what he says about horse town. He said, bind the chariot to the swift steed, O inhabitant of horse town. She was the beginning of sin to the daughter of Zion. Now, I don't know, for he said that for the transgression of Israel, transgressions were found in thee. Now, here the where the both horses, now here are the steeds, so they'll be running, getting, trying to get away from the enemy of Syria in horse town when the enemy comes. Now, in what way, Lachish was the beginning of sin to Israel, I don't know. It's been guessed that it was in this horse trade by Solomon. He carried on. That was a part of the beginning of the fall of Jerusalem, of Judah. That could be true, I don't know. We're not told what it was, we're just told that it was. Now he says here, and he comes on down from that, therefore shalt thou give a parting gift to Moresheth Gath. That simply means the possession of Gath. Right? Now you'll give a parting gift. It'll no longer be the possession of the people there, but they'll be carried away captive there. A play on the word there. And the houses of Achzib, that is a false spring there, shall be a deceitful thing under the kings of Israel. So here was a false spring. Go there to get water and there wasn't any. So the whole thing would be given over to falsehood and to a false concept. They trusted in these idols, but they were false trusts. Everything, the whole hope was on built on a false hope. Just like here's a false spring. It has a little water one time, next time it doesn't have any. You go there thirsty to find it. I will yet bring unto thee, O inhabitant of Marishah. Now this is not Moresheth Gath, this is a different town. This means air town, H-E-I-R. O inhabitant of Marishah, him that shall possess thee the glory of Israel. That is, I'll bring in this air town, you'll no longer be an heir to you, but I'll bring in the Assyrians who will possess it. And if not the Assyrians, then later the Babylonians. And they shall come even to Adullam, unto Adullam. Now the word Adullam meant the wild beast cave. You remember that David made that one of his headquarters, the cave of Adullam, the wild beast cave. All right, now notice what's going to happen here. The glory of Israel shall come even unto Adullam, that is the cave of the wild beast, and that would be Assyria. Assyria was a wild beast ravaging the country there, and you'd be carried away into it. That's the most interesting passage there, in that all of these names are used by him to indicate something of the future that's going to come upon them. And I don't remember all of them. I jot them down and I'll forget them, but at any rate, I know that that's so. It's called paronomasia, the use of one thing here to indicate another there, and the likeness of the word there. All right, now make thee bold and cut off thy hair for the children of thy delight. Enlarge thy boldness as the eagle, for they are gone into captivity. Who? Your children are. Now, it hadn't happened yet, but this is the thing you notice about the prophets. What they call the prophetic future, perfect, or something like that, is when they speak in the future, I mean, of something in the future is already happening, already taken place. They're going into captivity. For unless there's a change, their captivity is determined by God. God determined. So there'll be no way to avert that captivity unless you turn to God. Turn back. That's the idea. So he starts off here in his prophecy, I think, in a very strong way. As he begins here first with Samaria, the stone will be rolled down, the hill will be leveled where they were made. can make a vineyard out of it, and God's wrath will be poured out of this as the fire of a volcano flowing down the mountainside, and in the destruction of that of Samaria there. Well, that took place in 722. Now when it turns here to Judah, now this is a prophecy against Judah, the villages here, in which probably he was preaching here, that here's what's going to take place here. Fair town and all that, horse town, you'll be getting out of that just as fast as you can on the horse and all that. So a play on his words here, and makes a very interesting idea and concept. Any question over that? All right, that's coming out of Judah. So he moves on. Now, woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they practice it, because it is in the power of their hand. Now, this is against the social conditions of that day, and especially the wealthy. Now, notice what they do. He says here, woe unto them. That's terror unto them, destruction unto them, that devise iniquity and work evil in their beds. That is, when they go to bed, instead of going to sleep, they will always have a heritage. Every 7 Now that's the day of the judgment against this wickedness. In that day shall they take up a parable against you and lament with a doleful lamentation, say, we are utterly ruined. He changeth the portion of my people. How doth he remove it from me? To the rebellious he divideth our fields. Therefore thou shalt have none that shall cast a line by lot in the assembly of Jehovah. Now when the Assyrians come, they'll take it over themselves. These wealthy people who have gotten everybody's land under their control and ruling it to their advantage and against the poor people, why then when this judgment comes, then there'll be nobody to measure this land for you, for you'll be carried into captivity. In other words, what you wealthy, unscrupulous fellows have done, that's going to come back to you. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. That's an eternal law of God. I remember I preached on that not too long ago. We reap according to our sowing. Every sowing brings its own harvest. Every harvest is the fruit of a sowing. Now just apply that to this country today. What have we been sowing? What are we reaping? What we're reaping is a result of what? Of our sowing. As back yonder, we began to deny that we accepted the humanistic philosophy, and atheism has become more and more to control, and evolution became the order of the day. You can't mention God anymore. You can't pray in public school anymore, and none of these things. Well, what's happening? We're reaping the consequence of our sowing. It's inevitable. It always will be. And so that's what God's saying now. All right, you rob them, and one of these days it's going to be taken away from you and given to somebody else. Is the Spirit of Jehovah straightened? Are these his doings? Now the idea is what? The idea is they don't prophesy. God says, is my Spirit straightened where I've got to listen to these false prophets, whether I'll let you prophesy or not? No. Well, if God wants to send a prophet, he'll send a prophet, and the prophet will speak what God gives him to speak. Now look further. Do not my words do good to him that walketh uprightly? Sure they do. So now then, don't tell a man don't prophesy, because God's word is going to do good unto the individual who walks uprightly. So prophesy the word, preach the word, that individuals may be strengthened by, that the wicked may be warned by, that we may be guided and directed by it, whether people like it or don't like it, in season, out of season, said Paul to Timothy. I'm going to ask Brother Keeble what that meant. Why, he said, in season when they lax it, and out of season when they don't lax it. When they lax it or don't lax it, you keep on preaching it. I thought he about had it right. I don't think you could approve on that. And so he was a great man, Brother Keeble. I don't know whether you ever knew him or not, but he was a fine, upright man, a good preacher. But of late my people has risen up as an enemy You strip the wool from off the garment, from then on, or you leave him a little thin undergarment there. Yet he wants to walk uprightly. He wants to do the right thing, and he wants peace, but you won't let him have it. Talking to a man last night, yesterday afternoon down in Florida. He said this condition is becoming terrible. He said they're busting the door down, breaking in, when people are watching television, there were 6 or 8 cases happening like this down in his little community out there. Where they bust in there and hold people gun point, take everything they had, you know, and just bust the door down there. Go on in, take it. Well, when you catch them, what do you do? Slap them on the wrist, turn them loose, go back again. So I put them in an electric chair and get them out of the way here and not take up room around here. Well, that's what we were handling at these days. Not that I'm a politician, I'm not going to get into this thing. My indignation is over the fact that's a total violation of God's way of doing things and is going to bring an inevitable judgment that's going to destroy our whole nation. That's the thing that bothers me. I'm not, I don't got to shoot anybody, anything like that. I don't like to see people put in electric chair. But when God says they ought to be, well, I ought to be. But it moves on. The women of my people you cast out from their pleasant houses. From their young children you take away my glory forever. That is, so you take away their land, cast the widow out and the children out. To root hog or die, however she may get by with. They're heartless. They don't care. We don't have that condition. I don't think our nation is that heartless, because we're in debt trillions of dollars to try and take care of people that won't work. Not that they don't want to work, but they just won't work. And I'm not in favor of feeding those. Man won't work, well, then starve to death. That's God's policy. Thessalonians, and I think that's right. Well, what I'm trying to get you to see, I want you to see God in history. God's still in history. God doesn't change. What God did yesteryear, he does this year. God still follows the same principles of right, always. Let me hasten on. Arise ye and depart, for this is not your resting. Rise ye and depart, for this is not your resting place, because of uncleanness that destroyeth, even with a grievous destruction. Now here's what the prophet says concerning the kind of preaching they wanted. If a man walking in a spirit of falsehood do lie, saying, I will prophesy unto thee of wine and of strong drink, he shall even be the prophet of this people. What do people want to hear? Well, you take our television evangelists there, send us $100 and you get us, God, to give you $1,000 back. All right? What do they want to listen to? They want to listen to that kind of preacher. What folks want in this country today is preaching that suits them, not whether it makes a difference, not whether it's what God wants or not. It's what we want. Now, that'll be the preacher of today. Generally speaking, not always. A lot of those folks have had that kind of preaching, getting tired of it. But the great majority of the people, they want that kind of preaching. Don't tell us what's wrong. Don't condemn us for our sins. Don't emphasize these things here. Preach unto us of material prosperity. Interesting, isn't it? To listen to these politicians today, even the one that you may have the greatest respect for and think the most of. What do they talk about? They talk about the thing we've got to have first before we can do anything is economy. Get the economy rolling. Get back to the money part of it. Not a one of them touches the real issue. We can never have anything worth a dime till we get back to the moral principles and get back to a moral standard and restore something of a morality in the country in which we live. They don't talk about that. So it's kind of bothering you, doesn't it? The fact that all the individuals that are running for president and vice president and everything else, what are they interested in? Whale did venture out to speak on morality. What did they do? They tried to crucify. Nailed him to the cross, of course, and have a baby down here for the woman that he was mentioning that had this baby out of wedlock and all that. They want to have a whole day in honoring her down here at Tucson. who can stop it? The people of God can't. It's only the people that rule God out. And ruling God out invites what? Invites judgment. Invites God's judgment and his wrath poured out like a fire of a volcano as it flows down the side there, consuming everything in its way. Have we asked for that? Yes, we've asked for it. God's going to give it to us. He always gives us what we really want bad enough to keep on asking. We just ask for these kind of things. That's what we've been getting. Now, this next two verses, I'm not sure what they mean. I took one position in a book that I wrote a number of years, 20 years ago, on this, and I'm not sure I was right. Now, where it seems like, is this what he's saying? I will surely assemble, O Jacob, all of thee. Now, they're saying up here, don't prophesy. Prophesy the things we want to hear. I'm going to tell you something that is good. In the future, I will assemble, O Jacob, all of thee. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together as the sheep of Bozrah, as a flock in the midst of their pasture. They shall make great noise by reason of the multitude of them. The breaker is gone up before them. That would be the leader. That would be the Christ, if this is messianic. He's gone up before them. They have broken forth and passed on to the gate, and are gone out thereat. And the king is passed on over before them, and Jehovah at the head of them. Now, is that messianic? I took the position that it is. Now, here this is a messianic hope here of the time in the future when there'll be a breaking forth and Christ will lead them and God at the head will lead a remnant back. Or is this a prophecy of their destruction in which God at the head will be leading them and they'll be break forth and be carried into captivity? I really am not sure. I took one position in the book, and I'm not as sure of it as I thought it was then. I don't know whether this is messianic, and if it is, then you have a messianic prophecy here as a sort of an encouragement in the midst in the midst of calamity. Here's the hope of after a while when God gathers a remnant together, and he leads them through Jesus Christ into this great pasture of salvation. That's very possible and probable. That's the position I took then. On the other hand, it could be God's going to gather them together and he will lead them as he carries them into captivity. Now, I don't know which it is. Both happened. But he didn't have in mind but one of them, and I don't know which it was. So I'll leave that to you to make up your mind, whichever one you think it is, and I'm not sure. Now, next time, in the third chapter, now here is the destruction here of Judah that's finally coming. And then in chapters 4 and 5, two wonderful chapters on the Messiah, the Messianic hope. Well, I'll leave the lesson with you there. I just trust that these are not pleasant things to talk about, I know that. But if they're true, that's what we want to hear. We want to hear truth, don't we? All right, we'll leave it with you.